Welcome to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. In each episode, Andrew interviews industry leaders. We'll hear their real-time opinions on today's market, their background and unique career highlights, and guidance for newcomers into the industry. You can find this show at spilarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Now here's the host of Real Talk, Andrew Kirsch.
Episode 47 of Real Talk. Well, as you can tell, I'm not in my office. I'm in a house in Deer Valley, one of my clients' houses. So I'm not going to say who, but thank you to that special client for opening up their house to my family during our spring break. We're having just a wonderful time in Deer Valley. How can you not? This week on Real Talk, I have Jonathan Carson, co-founder of Stretto. Stretto is a company that assists companies and clients with respect to the bankruptcy process. And given what we're going through in the real estate market, our recent deal that we talked about on a prior podcast where we purchased an airplane hangar out of bankruptcy, I wanted John to come in to talk about how clients can take advantage offensively of the bankruptcy process. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with John Carson.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Real Talk. I'm here with my fellow YPOer, Jonathan Carson. John, how you doing?
Good to be here, Andrew. I'm well, thanks. How you doing?
Good. So I remember us meeting, we were at the Huntington Gardens, and I think there was this elaborate drum demonstration, I think, in the Japanese gardens, and we realized how many commonalities we had from you formerly being a lawyer, you still working with lawyers, being in the bankruptcy world. And so it was really great to meet you then.
Yeah, no, totally. It was odd also. And as well as kind of the entrepreneurship connection from going from kind of the world of straight professional services into something a little bit different, which, you know, it's kind of, it's cool to hear that story on your side as well.
Yeah. So tell us about Stretto, which is your company. And I'm on your website here and it says sitting at the center of the bankruptcy ecosystem. And so I know a lot of our clients who are trying to play offense in these days may use bankruptcy offensively. And obviously there's folks out there that are forced to use bankruptcy through a defensive position. So first tell us about Stretto and how you got involved in it.
No, sure. Maybe kind of goes back a little bit. You know, Stretto is the largest technology platform in the bankruptcy and the insolvency space today in America. And there's a handful of businesses that I oversee along with Eric Kurtzman, who's my co-CEO. The story goes back to just Eric and I being bankruptcy guys for the last 25 years, having begun while working either inside of a bankruptcy court for a judge or at a boutique firm or a large firm, and kind of ending up meeting and finding a way to bring some technology and innovation to the world of bankruptcy, which otherwise had been a pretty antiquated space for a while. Eric and I founded a business that we then grew quite a bit in the corporate restructuring side of the bankruptcy world after I left Kirkwood & Ellis. And then Eric and I, after kind of having exited that business years ago, are now kind of in that second act type of thing where we began in a bit of a different part of the bankruptcy space and has grown a number of businesses around consumer bankruptcy and corporate restructuring both. And as you mentioned, in many ways, especially on the corporate side in the last couple of decades, that word is bankruptcy has gone from a lot more of pure defense to offense. And you have lots of players in different types of industries looking to use it to take advantage of situations or opportunities based on market conditions. There's a lot going on in bankruptcy today.
Yeah. Well, you know, clients of mine look to me as sort of the canary in the coal mine where they always want to pick my brain. What am I seeing out there? What type of distress? What am I hearing? And it gives them just one data point of what is happening in the marketplace. And so I assume you guys can sit in a similar position based on the number of bankruptcies, the types of bankruptcies, what industries. So can you tell my audience of what you're seeing sort of in the, we have this like fragmented economy in that, you know, stock market is at all time highs, employment numbers are still strong. Inflation still really, it's come down, but it's still higher than what the Fed wants. Are we going to drop rates? Are we not? So where, what do you see based on where you sit in running this bankruptcy technology business?
Happy to share. It's a great question. And I think if we kind of remember and we keep our two worlds separate, there's the whole world of consumer bankruptcy, which is, you know, Mary Smith has a decent job but doesn't have healthcare and has an unexpected large medical expense that becomes difficult and results in the bankruptcy. That's most of the bankruptcy in our country, obviously, 90%+. But then there's this world of corporate restructuring or corporate bankruptcy, which are situations where you have businesses of all different types of organizations, different kinds of businesses, they'll experience some situation and find themselves in that word that you use, which is distress. And that could be a technical term according to some ratings agencies, but you know, the concept of stress or distress, what brings that about? What are we seeing? We do run one of the largest businesses in the corporate restructuring industry with Stretto Corporate Restructuring, where our business is brought in to support the back end of some of these very large Chapter 11 cases around the country. And you know, I think in that part of the market, just thinking back the last handful of years, pandemic happens and there's a spike in the Chapter 11 market because of everything from retail and other businesses that experienced difficulty when all of a sudden numbers went way down because the economy kind of shut down and we all stayed home for a bit. Then if things began to recover.
By the way, a bit. I feel like we were home more than a bit, especially in LA.
Yeah, it was a little more than, oh man, I got a lot done, I feel like. But yeah, anyway.
I know. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
That's all good. It's good to have the conversation. Yeah, and then, you know, kind of returned in as you looked at kind of 2021, 22, we moved forward and 23, we actually saw a pretty active year in the world of Chapter 11, but maybe not as some people would expect, or maybe not as we saw as much as back in early pandemic phase. What do I mean by that? In the corporate restructuring world, there's that really big tier market that's kind of global powerhouse firm types that have multi-billion dollar debtor clients that have to go and restructure. There are lots of those out there. And then there's an even bigger market that is that middle market that has grown a lot in the last 20 years and used to be really smaller numbers and now feels like deals from 50 million to maybe 500, some might even call a middle market situation. The middle market's been really busy. The larger market where you hear more about the Neiman Marcus's, the huge type of bit, quieter. I mean, yes, you have your WeWorks and your Rite Aids, but quieter in general. And the middle market was very busy, and that's kept professionals around the country busy. There are some industries that have seen challenges, plus this dynamic that you talked about, which is higher interest rates. Higher interest rates in and of itself bring about stress or distress situations, depending on capital structure, a market, things that we're happy to talk about, right? Industries like healthcare have been challenged. Energy has been challenged. Everyone, as I mentioned, has talked about commercial real estate for a long time, although doesn't seem to have been as challenged in terms of the world of distress. Doesn't mean there's a lot of health out there either. You would know that more than anybody in terms of what you do. Anyway, I stop there for a minute and feel like we've taken from there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, when we, during COVID, in the depths of COVID in 2020, and as a firm, we felt that we needed to have bankruptcy. We hired Robin Itkin, who, you know, we had lunch a month or two ago, and you know, she's a prolific bankruptcy attorney from DLA, and hired other bankruptcy attorneys to handle what we thought would be the onslaught of bankruptcy coming out of COVID. And I know you mentioned that obviously we saw an uptick in bankruptcies because of COVID. And really coming out of the couple years since COVID. But how do you compare this era of bankruptcy and distress compared to the GFC days where, you know, every day it was a new like major financial institution like a Lehman going bankrupt and Bear Stearns going bankrupt and note sales that lasted for several years. And, you know, we're seeing some note sales and we can get into it, but how do you compare the last couple of years versus, let's say, 2008 to 2012?
and Washington Mutual, which was a client of ours, sure. Blockbend Circuit City, and the whole, there was so much that happened. And I think we have to also remember that was coming off the heels of the massive kind of reorientation of the auto space, ranging from the OEMs at the top all the way down to, you know, tier two, three, and below that suppliers that felt that so there was a lot that was going on. And those years kind of were certainly busier from kind of the market dislocation and from the broader perspective, I would say. But I think a lot has changed also since back then that's relevant. I do think we saw a period of increased scrutiny or kind of concern last year on the regional banks when we had that situation, what might happen from there. But we haven't seen kind of any real dislocation get caused by something in a bigger cap industry. Yeah, we saw the crypto space, which is clearly the last one that we saw, from the exchanges to all sorts of players in and around that space that have undergone a restructuring. We're involved in many of those deals, and they're interesting, but I don't think it's nearly as busy as it was back then. I think, you know, when the pandemic started, as you mentioned, there was kind of a really noticeable pickup because of a lot of these just shocks to the system that we talked about, right? Company has covenants and debt instruments, and they're based on ratios between EBITDA or revenue, whatever, and revenue goes to zero because you can't open your doors. That brought a lot of problems, right? It's different now, but I feel like coming out of that, maybe the year later, someone made the comment to me that, you know, it doesn't feel like there are any real tsunamis on the horizon in terms of the kind of things that might fall off a cliff. It feels more like there will be a steady stream of work in this space for the, you know, really, I think more than a handful of years to come. I think when you combine that with the continued increase in rates during that time and the fact of where they are and while they will come down, there will be a band, and it's just different than it was. And you have maturities coming up and, right? I think it'll be a steady stream of work for some time. We didn't have that. I mean, the GFC and what it brought was immediate and it was long lasting, but then it did stop. And anyways, I don't know. It's interesting. We'll be interested in that. I also think that practices such as yours doing what you did in regard to that practice area, I think it's hugely important because, again, there will be opportunities for talented lawyers like Robin to get involved and help a client strategically play offense by taking advantage of a situation. Happens so much in our world.
Yeah. So let's actually go to that. And I'm releasing, or I guess by the time this podcast gets released, it'll happen in the past. Robin and our firm was instrumental in advising a client in buying a fee simple airplane hangar that was in bankruptcy. So it wasn't on a ground lease. The government didn't own it. It was a privately owned airport hangar out of the Hawthorne Airport in bankruptcy, went to Chapter 7. Our client was the stalking horse bidder. Robin knew the trustee. It was really an unbelievable execution on her part, on our client's part, on the capital part to buy this asset out of bankruptcy. And so many of my clients are asking me, hey, how do you replicate that? When are we going to see other of these opportunities? So I guess my question is, are you seeing, because my audience is mostly real estate, are you seeing real estate opportunities through bankruptcy?
Sure. I don't think there are multiple hangar opportunities in every market across our country like what happened in that deal.
Sure.
That would be wonderful, right? But yeah, no, I get it.
Or any product type.
Or any product type. And I actually think I know that specific deal. But there are a lot of opportunities that result from kind of a combination of real estate and operational dynamics that can result in, you know, a situation where it's right for an investor to come in. And it sounds like, you know, there's a great story behind what happened in that situation. And I think in terms of looking at other things like it and you compare to the real estate world, and you know, you and I had a really interesting conversation at lunch about this, and we don't have answers, right? I mean, the real estate world is a situation where you think about aftermath effects of the pandemic with regard to vacancy rates and office usage and all of this. And it feels like that office market should be one of those that's kind of tumbling in kind of like the way that maybe the crypto space, of course, for different reasons, right, did because of a real problem in the market, macro speaking. And it just hasn't happened, right? And why is that? And I, by the way, that's a different market than smaller multifamily or entrepreneurs who have businesses that happen to have, you know, a certain sizable amount of square feet and different. This is different. But in that space, why hasn't it happened? And I think, I don't know, right? And I'm not a real estate expert. I would love to hear your take on it. My take on the bankruptcy side of it is you've probably got maturities that are out there at some point in all of these things. As those maturities come closer, the rate dynamic will have a massive effect on how both sides view the situation. And in the meantime, there's a question sometimes around even who holds that responsibility because of the use of things like securitizations and other things. Other times, it's just a matter of, does a lender really want to kind of get into that role, right, while we're still a little ways out from maturity? There's, I imagine, so complicated. I imagine you see a lot of situations in that world. And I don't know why that is. I do think there will be opportunities to look at things from a perspective of value and distress and be able to take advantage of that market situation.
Yeah, well, we're certainly seeing it in office. And I've said it in other podcasts, we worked on two large office transactions where the lender sold the note to our client and we had a concurrent deed in lieu of foreclosure. We just closed an office deal in Denver at a significant discount to the face amount of the note, also in office.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great use of our little part of the universe, really.
Yeah. And so, but you know, these aren't ending up in bankruptcy. And my theory is a couple fold. One, most loans are non-recourse with a non-recourse carve-out guarantee. And what would trigger actual recourse is if the SPE, the single purpose entity borrower, files bankruptcy, right? And so borrowers and guarantors don't want to trigger that. And so they end up with these lender facilitated sales. The bankruptcies that we've been involved in, like that Hawthorne deal or in other deals in the past, when you have a much larger company that has many assets under its belt, maybe it's a capital provider or an individual, and they're the guarantors and there's recourse, the only way out is to file bankruptcy. And so it's those that we're looking for from an offensive perspective for our clients to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Sure. And I think there's, you know, I think two things come to mind in that vein. One of them is the fact that the word bankruptcy, you know, it's got so much, very emotional, very, very pet, brings different things to mind for different people. And especially when it comes to certain parts of our business world, like real estate, as you described, bankruptcy is not the word that we use, right? The word, but nonetheless, we may be in a situation involving distress. Stress or distress, again, which we've got an asset or an organization that's got a problem. And that problem is causing there to be a decline in the value of the ownership of that, or at least a place at the table, maybe through the debt, which is how it happens oftentimes. There are a lot of ways that people can be offensive and opportunistic without the use of the word bankruptcy, but still see something happen by way of a restructuring. When you acquire a note in a situation like that and take kind of the controlling seat at the table in a significant value dynamic, that's a great distress play. And we spent a lot of time studying the great distressed investors of our world, the ones that come from the Wall Street, the Carl Icahns and the Teppers and the Bill Loebs, all the way to the ones that come from the purely operational side, the Phil Anschutzes and things like that. I think that it's not always bankruptcy. And the other thing I would say is, I think your airport example is a great example of the fact that sometimes you see a real estate opportunity that's kind of sitting inside of some operational train wreck. We like operational train wrecks if we're investors in real estate sometimes, right? Because right. maybe there's a solution involving that real estate that helps everybody who's involved and can be really opportunistic from the investor's perspective. Sometimes that might be in a bankruptcy court like you saw in Hawthorne. Sometimes it might not be, but it might still be a situation of operational distress. More likely, you mentioned you're totally right with regard to the SPE dynamic and in the real estate deals. Operating companies, they have reasons to go into bankruptcy to do things they have to do. That means the real estate gets brought in. Now, sometimes opportunity.
Yeah. And then from where you sit at Stretto, because I know a lot, some of the distress doesn't end up in bankruptcy, but is Stretto purely a company that services actual bankruptcy proceedings, or are you involved in non-bankruptcy distress workout situations?
No, that's a great question. Thanks for the chance to even share that. And the answer for sure is the latter. It's really kind of a range. When we say bankruptcy and insolvency, and it means broad things. I'll just get the very high level. We do have a specific technology business that supports the bankruptcy trustees in our country who play fiduciary to help on the consumer bankruptcy world. We have the largest software platform to support that industry. We also acquired, as part of this journey over the last 6 years, we acquired the largest SaaS business when it comes to consumer bankruptcy filings. When Mary Smith needs to file bankruptcy, the lawyer that she chooses is going to use a platform like Best Case that we own to prep and file the actual bankruptcy. Neither of those are particularly interesting in the corporate world, right? On the corporate side, we do have a very large player in the Chapter 11 claims agent space, which is what we've kind of been talking about. Neiman Marcus, Washington Mutual, Circuit City, Voyager, all these businesses that are larger that have to be administered through a bankruptcy. We do more than we do among more than anybody else in the country when it comes to servicing that community. We work with the largest firms in the country, usually those super large firms that represent very large businesses in Chapter 11. But our corporate restructuring business also includes a very sizable practice supporting federal equity receivers when it comes to helping them unwind problems, which happen regularly. And it includes what are called workouts or consensual deals that don't end up in a Chapter 11. But we have a very significant public securities team in New York who oftentimes supports deals that are done out of court, because in the right situations, you actually can consummate a restructuring without going into bankruptcy court. Again, if you have unanimity in your creditor support and a bunch of things. And so we do a lot more than just Chapter 11 bankruptcy. We're kind of in the bankruptcy space, in the insolvency space, in the distress space. And I could go on, but I'm not going to, because we've got other questions that we want to get.
No, it's fine. I would say the three types of ways that clients are coming to us through distress or bankruptcy is you'll have a retail landlord of a shopping center and their tenants, whether it's large or midsize or small, those tenants are filing bankruptcy, as you've alluded to. And so having to file creditor claims. Second is offensively, like what we did in Hawthorne Airport, and buying the real estate. And those are unique and rare opportunities. And then there's this third, which is, you know, so many of our clients are monitoring defaults of loans and trying to contact lenders to be, you know, at the top of the list, so that when lenders are going to either sell their paper or a sale of the asset, that our client is at that top of the list to get the phone call. So of those three scenarios, which really encapsulate, I don't know, 95% of our distress type of conversations, how can Stretto help any one of those clients?
Sure. No, it's a great question. And I think, you know, when you're in a position as a principal and you're making investments or you're managing a portfolio or you're looking at things to do, obviously we want to rely on kind of the highest caliber legal advice you can get. That's kind of where it starts, right? And obviously you've built a team and a platform that provide that out of clients, and they come to you with different things. And one of the things that, you know, is very, I think that we've done for a long time, can be helpful to someone in your situation, is to make sure you've identified partners that can be helpful to clients in situations when that comes up. And, you know, it really depends upon the nature of the situation. I think, in the example, when you're just kind of playing a supportive role in filing a claim and monitoring a Chapter 11 case for a client, presumably you're going to file that claim either with Stretto or with one of our competitors in that Chapter 11 claims agent space. We're always available to help if people have questions on what, how, when, where, but not much that otherwise do. Either we're playing a role in that case or we're not. In the situations involving looking at debt and looking at kind of what might be opportunistic for an investment in a real estate situation, sometimes that comes by way of an actual physical building. Sometimes it comes by way of kind of buying into the debt into a larger situation. And that is a situation where now, you want to have that expertise when it comes to the advisory side, which you do with Robin and the team. And if you find an opportunity may find its way into a Chapter 11, it probably won't, in which case, again, not an area that Stretto particularly plays in. But there are also situations where, people will find themselves as, subject to a situation that involves a fiduciary situation. There could be something that comes out of a court process and results in a trust. And oftentimes when our clients that we work with are large companies, or even people that aren't clients but have businesses that go through bankruptcy and they come out and there's a trust created to be paid to creditors over a period of many years, that's where people usually come to us and say, can we help? Because we can manage all that check writing and data management side of it.
Yeah. Well, I want to pivot the conversation in our remaining minutes. Some of my clients, in fact, Bob Hart, True America, a couple podcasts ago, he talked about how he transitioned from being an engineer to then going in the real estate business. You have lawyers who have gone into the real estate business. You have yourself, who was a lawyer at large firms, and now in the technology side of industry. And so how is it, talk about just the differences of being a service provider, working at a big firm versus being an entrepreneur and not keeping track of your time in 6-minute increments, which is the bane of every lawyer's existence.
I mean, we used to have like sheets of paper at Kirkland that had them all laid
right
out.
Here. Look at this.
It's going to give me my six-minute
increments.
It's going to make me shake if I have to look at that. I feel like each of our respective backgrounds can be so different, and really the journey is unique. I had gone from clerking from a bankruptcy judge to Kirkland & Ellis, a very large law firm. That was my law firm experience, with the exception of a short stint at a boutique before founding my business, but knowing when I went to that boutique, it was only going to be in transition because the founding process already had started. I loved the world of corporate restructuring. I did not like the world of big law back then in terms of what I felt like I could offer into this community. And I'm still 25 years later, a bankruptcy geek. I love it. It's the best system of its kind in the world. I teach on it. I really enjoy kind of spreading it because it provides a fresh start for anybody who seeks to use it, whether an individual or a consumer or an organization. But the opportunity to kind of found a business to make a process better, which really is what happened. We were lawyers that were working for a client, and the client spent more money than it should have spent on a certain part of the case because it shouldn't have had big firm lawyers doing that type of work. And we created a platform to allow for a more efficient and cost-effective part of the deal, add a lot of value, bring new technology, made the whole thing better, which was great. And the entrepreneurial part has really been, so rewarding. And that's where it was fun to kind of connect with you over a similar dynamic. I mean, this is our second time now, and it's just different. And it's a lot of people, it's all over the world, and it's been, multiple industries, and it's different and it's fun. It's empowering. It's stressful. It's a very different life than spending my time kind of providing advice on the specific client side. And I think I'm also more suited for this role than I was for the keeping track of my 6-minute increments. Although we do provide lots of subs and the value to clients in terms of ongoing deals, some super complex stuff. And Eric and I will actually be involved with kind of how things are happening. And Eric is very, very particular that I've got my 6-minute game in full gear. So I haven't left the 6-minute game. It's just not a very big part of my life anymore.
Yeah, if I had to do it all over again, the entertainment law industry has it right because they just get a percentage of the deals. They do not have to keep these timesheets. They get 5% of their clients' deals. It's a much more civilized way if you're going to be a lawyer in a law firm.
I back in my K&E days, talked to some of the kind of higher up in terms of the fact of why aren't there fixed fee dynamics in some of these situations? And not fixed fee. Why aren't there success fee dynamics in some of these situations? Like there's such a value provided by the legal team, substantive value add. Why do certain professionals in those deals, like investment bankers, kind of get to have that opportunity to work for the really adding value to a deal? So I don't know. Maybe there's a chance one day to do that. I didn't even. Yeah, it's interesting, but it's never been the real practice of the law. So it's hard.
Yeah. Well, in our firm and being a head of a firm, I'm able to have creative billing structures, and whether it's flat fees, success fees, things of that nature, we're able to do it, invest with our clients. And it's the reason why I'm at Sklar Kirsch and not the former firms that we all came from.
I love 100%. That's where we are very aligned, which is great. And it makes it more fun.
It totally does. So I'm going to end on this. So when we finished our lunch, you threw out a question saying, all right, Kirsch, what podcasts are you listening to? What shows are you watching? Books that you're reading? So I want to end the podcast the same way you ended our lunch. So tell me. Podcast shows, books.
I think as I told you, WRL, right? It's an agenda item I have in some of my meetings. WRL. What are you watching, reading, or listening to?
Right.
Since the last time we got together. So I'm happy to do a couple of rounds of that.
Okay.
I've been traveling a tremendous amount over the last few weeks. I've watched a few things. I would say on maybe the reading side first, I just finished a few months ago a really awesome book called From Strength to Strength by a guy named Arthur Brooks about kind of finding happiness in the second half of life and jumping from that first curve to the second curve when it comes to all sorts of dynamics of what you're doing, what goes on around you. And it was awesome. It was inspirational. It was spiritual. It was kind of made me think a lot given where I am and how I spend my time. But I like that, From Strength to Strength. What else? So
should I say my book?
Yeah, we'll go back and forth. We'll do a couple
back and forth. Tennis. So I had him on my podcast recently, Ethan Penner, who is sort of the godfather of CMBS and financier. He wrote a book called Greatness is a Choice. It's a very interesting book in that it's not a long book. It's under 200 pages, but it's like 60 or 70 chapters. So each chapter is just 2 to 3 pages. So these little snippets, it fits great with everyone's attention span where we're trying to, you know, get instant gratification and you pick it up. You're like, oh, I could easily bang out, you know, several chapters. It's only a few pages. And it's an interesting perspective on how to be great. So that's that book. And then during the Christmas holiday, I was talking about a much denser, bigger book, Peter Attias's book, Outlive. Now I'm 1.5 years away from being 50. And so I got to figure out how to outlive the second half of my life.
I mean, so I just have to say, and this is totally unrelated to anything about Real Talk with Real Estate with Andrew Kirsch, right? But I will say I've outlived on my desk right now and purchased it about a week ago. I have recently spent some time listening to Andrew Huberman on the podcast side. I'm a big All In fan and will always plug the Chamath and the guys if I can, because I think their conversations are amazing. But Andrew Huberman, who's in the medical side, kind of longevity, a lot of issues about this. I saw some reference about a month ago and I looked at it on Twitter X and there were like 11, I wrote these 11 tips. And I've been doing them for like the last month. It's been amazing. And someone as part of my discussions about it, and it isn't rocket science. It's cold exposure. It's hydration. It's intermittent fasting. It's a few of these things, right? And someone mentioned you've got to read Peter Attia's Outlive. So I just picked it up and I'm way past you at 51. So I love that we're on that same track though.
Yeah, for sure. On the same track, meaning
trying to get better for this stuff, right? Yeah, trying to get better for this stuff.
And so what podcast are you listening to? You already mentioned All In.
Yeah, I mentioned that and Andrew Huberman. Aside from that, Nothing new on my podcast scene.
Yeah. Well, other than Real Talk, of course. And I listen to Scott Galloway, Prof G, consistently. I think he's it's a great, enjoyable podcast. All right. Any shows that you're binging now?
Any shows that I'm binging right now, I would say not like in the middle of. Before a trip to Asia over the holidays, I watched Tokyo Vice on Max and enjoyed it. I think more because I was going there and got to experience some of the culture and flavor before I got there. And we just finished watching Griselda maybe a few weeks ago.
Saw Griselda. Griselda's intense.
I need a soft show next.
What's that?
I need a jury duty or something kind of soft next to kind of get in that I can take, because that was intense.
Yeah, that was intense. So Curb Your Enthusiasm has come back.
How did I not mention Curb? Sorry.
Yeah, I can't believe it's still going strong. What, 20-some-odd years into it? It's sad seeing Richard Lewis in it since he just passed away. We've got kids that are 9 and 7. And so every weekend we try and watch a movie together. And we usually watch like an 80s classic that we think they would enjoy. And so they're, in addition to like traditional sports and dance and drama for my daughter and sports for my son, they're now doing Taekwondo, karate. So we watched The Karate Kid, and, all those movies just bring back, good feelings of how, when we were a kid and watched it for the first time.
I have a kid that's a little bit older. My youngest, as you know, is 13. He and I finished watching each season of Cobra Kai, which took me back to the Karate Kid days. And it was super fun, especially doing that with our kids as they kind of grow up. We watched also Jack Ryan, which was really fun to do together.
I had a big crush on Elizabeth Shue. And so it's great to see her in Cobra Kai. Jonathan, we could go all day and compare shows and podcasts and books, but I'm appreciative of you coming on, giving your perspective on bankruptcy and distress, especially given the times that we're in today. And thank you. Thanks for coming on to the show.
It was fun. I didn't know what to expect aside from having to wear a jacket and a shirt, which I'm pretty upset that I wore. I'm just kidding.
I know. And I'm wearing the long sleeve t-shirt like a tech.
Right.
It should have been flip flopped. All right, John, good luck with Strato. And I can't wait to see you at the next YPO event.
Good to see you, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. You can catch prior episodes at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Thank you for your positive reviews, comments, and for sharing the show with others.